Yeah, those folks over at DCI are finally deciding that it's okay to play with good cards. So they're going to be giving us some cards that are actually good cards
Excellent.
in this set. So,
Or better.
or better
Or
than
better than
good.
good. Excellent.
So from this set, there are a few things to take into account. We're still in between the first World Championship, which happened about June, July time, and the next year. So we're right in the middle there. And there are a number of things that came out of this set that were quite revolutionary, quite different, and really did upset the meta here. There was if you remember back to the first Worlds, Peter Sundtoll won with a Boom Wolf deck, or the first iteration of that. And probably the surprise deck in there was the Innosphere Cheap Mech Swarm, which was played by Yik. And that evolved because of this set from being lots and lots of cheap mechs to being lots and lots of cheap mechs with lots and lots of cheap, very, very powerful pilots, and via a specific card, which we'll talk about in a minute. And that had quite a big meta effect. It changed what people were playing and how people played. The second major thing for me was this was the major introduction of terrains into the game. We'd seen difficult terrain in the previous expansion. It was the first terrain card. In fact, it didn't even have the terrain keyword. But in this expansion, you'll see a number of them, and they have quite a profound effect on the game as well. And additionally, there were the introduction of the clan castes, which don't all feature very heavily, but there are one or two that are of merit. And alongside that, we had C3 introduced for the first time into the game. Rasselhag got some love, and St. Ives got some love. And the Rasselhag card, in combination with one or two other things, set the tone for another main meta change, which was the use of a mechless deck. And that was used reasonably, well, very successfully in the World Championship the following year. So this set itself had quite a big impact on shaking up everything that had gone before it. And as a set itself, Gus and I both agree that this is a major set. It's very, very heavily populated with very, very good, powerful, useful cards. And I think if we were going to rate it, as we said beforehand, this is up there with the best sets out there. It might arguably be the best set. You might argue that Crusade's better or they're joint, but if you're going to score it out of 10, then it's got to be a 9 or even a 10 kind of thing. It is a very good set. So if you're looking to spend some money and you want to get some good cards, then go buy some Mech Warrior. It's probably the best bit of advice to give at this point in time.
Definitely. It's not
Want
nearly
to
as
add
inflated,
anything, Gustav?
well, price wise, for those watching, it's definitely not as inflated as those that come before, which can go as far as $25, $30 for a pack. I know a Mech Warrior you can generally pick up for $10 a pack, $12 a pack at least, so it's somewhat affordable.
And with regard to the value for what you're paying, I agree, Travis. You have a set that each pack has the power to change your collection's deck construction for the better. Mark talked about the updates with regards to clan and Innosphere pilots, the big mech decks. The C3 is playable with this set. Just across the board, you have the ability to just create new meta in your own little play circle off of a couple of packs of Mech Warrior. So, if people are out there and still looking to scoop up packs for value, pick up this set as opposed to Arsenal or Crusade, which we all know can go for a lot more.
So we can all go and buy packs of Mech Warrior now and put them back on eBay at inflated prices. Good one, guys.
Excellent. Well, let's dive in. So, Mark, where are we starting at?
Going to start with Rasselhag, actually.
Okay.
I'm going to let Gustav do this one because this is one of his favorite cards.
So we're starting off with Rasselhag, and it is a house that has very few cards dedicated to it. But the cards that are dedicated to it start off in Mech Warrior, and they have some immensely powerful abilities. The first card we're going to be talking about is Staging Grounds. It's a one-cost command card that is a resource, so it can be pulled with one of our later cards. We're going to talk about War Funds. It does have a 2 logistics buyout, and it has 2 abilities. The first one, you can tap it for 1 resource. The second ability, you can tap it to put 3 construction counters on one of your command cards under construction. Now, there's a difference between show and reveal. You show that command card to all players, and you use this ability during deploy phase. If that command card is a scrap when reveal, it is not scrap. That has been clarified with regards to the definitions in the Commander's Edition rulebook. But you show that card to all players. It's not scrapped if it's revealed, even though it says it. And 3 construction counters will go on it. This is amazing because it's great in the Mechless deck or big mech decks. It's fantastic in a Star League deck. These are going to come later. And it does allow for you to build at a accelerated pace. It gets around arms reduction because those 3 counters do not count as resources for construction. So you get basically the 3 arms reduction counters that you normally would spend off of 1 tap of a resource. It's a fantastic card. I rate it an 8.
Good value for money. Just be mindful, it says command card under construction, so you can't use it to build mechs or anything else like that. But it's very clear at the time that this was put into place with a boost to command cards, and as we'll see in a minute with the Mechless deck, then this just got used in spades in that as a great resource booster. Because let's face it, you're paying 1, the next turn you're getting 3 back, and the following turn 3 back and 3 back. So providing it stays on the table, you are ahead on resource curve quite drastically. Gotcha. The next Rasselhag card is one I chose. It's called Airstrikes Close to Home. It's a 2 cost with a 6 politics buyout. However, it can, if you can boost it above that 2 cost, pay quite well in removing cards from your opponent's hand. So for every counter above the cost of that, you can remove 1 of your opponent's cards. If you're thinking that maybe, you know, they might have played a mission and they haven't got any or much in the way of draw, their hand size could be 4 or 5 cards. So with a boost, something like Staging Ground potentially, then you could boost this up quite quickly and completely destroy your opponent's hand. And at that point, you are in quite a good position because they're only going to be able to play the cards that they draw. Which is 2 a time. And as we know from a number of Battletech decks, there isn't normally a great deal of draw in them. So from that point of view, you can give yourself quite a strategic hand size advantage and gameplay advantage. You know, what happens when they draw 2 resources? You know, they're either going to play them or not do much. So you need to build a deck around it. But it can be, if used properly, quite a strong card and quite a good way of controlling your opponent. Hand attack, hand destruction, card removal, call it what you want, is around in a number of games. And has proved over a period of time and over a period of or variety of games to be quite a strong mechanic. And this card is just that.
Yep, it may set you back a little bit with regards to your curve being ahead on resources because you're devoting resources above the cost of 2. But with Staging Grounds, like Mark said, you can get a pretty good bang from your buck very quickly.
As I was kind of going through my collection earlier, it occurred to me, you know, looking at cards, you know, like the channel favorite Hyperpulse Generator, you know, cards that kind of allow you to kind of flip cards under description, they seem to be becoming a little bit more important in sets like these, because there's so many of these cards, very powerful cards like Airstrikes Close to Home, that are scrapped when revealed. And so it seems like, you know, it's adding another counter dynamic, counter strategy to that you really want, if you can start to reveal cards that are getting constructed, to do so, even if you can't destroy them, you know, getting them flipped over could be helpful for your long term.
I mean, the only issue there is that you've got to, they've got to be on the table and you've got to have counters on them. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a smart player and you're expecting something like that, then you might wait, build your resources up, drop it, fill the whole thing onto something like Airstrikes, and then just say, do you know what, I'm going to get rid of five of those cards and I'm not going to worry about six or seven. You're going to be a disadvantage. And therefore, it's played instantaneously instead of sitting around. The only one that really counters that is probably one of the big bombing cards. You know, horses for courses.
Yeah.
So how about a unique from Rasselhag, Mark?
Oh, Tyria. Mirrorborg, another great Rasselhag card, kind of, in the respect that she comes in at three cost with four munitions and three politics buyout. That's a heavy munitions buyout. But then you'll see in a second where this has a lot of synergy with the cards we've talked about and the next one. She has a basic ability, which is similar to Arrow 4, deal one structure to a mech or command card, which is a nice tap. But it is the second ability that really can pay dividends in the deck we're going to see or talk about, which is basically you tap her and remove her from the game. And basically you get another go, but you skip the missions phase. So you can tap all your resources, put them on a big bombing card, tap her, scrap her, go back, start your entire turn. Well, do your entire turn again, fill that card up with even more bombing counters until you've got something that's basically going to one turn kill, OTK, one shot your enemy. And that was, again, quite a pivotal thing with the Mechless deck. If you drew this, then you only needed half the resources that you needed. And from that point of view, very, very good in that deck. Take her out of the deck, then that becomes quite questionable. You know, you're skipping the mission phase if you're going into a more of a traditional mech and battle type deck. And therefore she comes across as being a lot weaker. She's great when she's great and she's rubbish when she's not.
I agree, Mark. You do need a deck built around it. But there was another game that Wizards of the Coast put out that we probably are familiar with. We're not going to give it any homage. But there's a card that gives you another turn in that particular game. And that card it isn't allowed to be played unless you're playing some kind of legacy. And the fact that Tyra gives you another turn, I recognize you don't get a mission phase, is huge in decks that need stability and need to build up. And the one deck you talked about that needed that type of time is the Mechless deck, or the big bombing deck. A second deck that needs that is a deck that requires a lot of uniques and a lot of card draw and recycling. You need more time to kind of put that out there. And we'll see about that later on in a Star League KSD Alliance Task Force Serpent build that I have. But this deck, this card features in that deck just because of that. This card gives you more time. And anytime you have a card that can give you another turn in that type of a situation, again, that's resource acceleration and that's command card acceleration. And in those types of decks, I mean, she shines. I'd put her at a 10 in the Mechless deck. I'd put her at a 10 in the Star League Task Force Serpent deck. In a normal deck that you're playing missions and you're playing with mechs, she may be a 2 or a 3.
I mean, the other thing you can say with her is that by taking another turn, you're actually getting another draw. And in Mechless decks where they use disguise coordinates to prevent attack, then you could draw into that, or you could actually save it. And you think, well, actually, I've got another disguise coordinate. Now I've got three turns effectively. This one, the Tyra, and the disguise coordinates. So all of a sudden that pile of counters just goes through the roof.
And what are we putting these counters on, Mark?
We are putting them on probably the most broken bombing card around. I hate using the word broken, but when you look at any of the bombing cards, you go and look at something like saturation bombing or whatever else, the ratio is always two counters to one damage. Doesn't matter where the damage goes or any other considerations, it's two for one, and they're all politics cards. And in MechWarrior, someone designed a card called Corridor of Fire, which has a munitions and a politics buyout. And all of a sudden, there's that synergy again with the young lady we've just talked about. And in this case, the counter to damage ratio is one to one. And that's huge. That's huge because taking two goes with Tyria, using staging ground, bumping your resources up, you could easily get 15, 20 resources a turn. And what you haven't realized is that the Mechless deck doesn't have it. Well, it's Mechless obviously, but it has buckets of resources. It's a counter generation machine. And the whole idea is to take all those counters and put them on this at a one-to-one ratio. If you remember where we've talked in the past, where you need something like about 40 damage, 30 damage maybe, because Mechless deck, slightly slower, longer game, to win, then, you know, if you can get 30 counters on there, you are in a very, very strong position. And it's very, very hard to get rid of this card, because your opponent or the Mechless deck player will be using Disguise Coordinate and directing your attacks wherever they want. So you can't actually hit it. So they can just build it and build it and build it and then just let it off when they want. It is power creep in this respect. And without this card, Mechless wouldn't be there. I don't think on a 2-to-1 ratio that the Mechless deck would be tournament viable. But at 1-to-1, very, very strong, very hard to beat. It's got to be a 9 in that meta. Nowadays, with the changes to Disguise Coordinate, probably not going to be played. It's better than the other bombing cards, but that doesn't mean that the other bombing cards are good.
No, I agree. In that Mechless deck, it's absolutely a 9, if not a 10. This is your game winner. This is your one shot kill. You're looking at Corridor of Fire. Now there is, I'm throwing this out there, I recognize it might not be particularly likable, there is a 1-to-1 ratio of a bombing card out there. The problem is it does the exact same damage to you. So you bring out the nukes, everybody hurts. But that, according to the rules, the revised rules, it does your damage last. So if you can get still a one-shot kill where everybody in your multiplayer game dies first, you can still win even though you go out too off of that tactical nuke.
It's an interesting ruling. So what's so for someone playing on the other side of the table, where's the red flag? When do you see a card with X number of counters where you're like, I need to change target priority and start seeing what's getting built there? 6 counters, 7 counters, you know, when do you need to start worrying that something like this is across from you?
If you're playing tournament and then you're expecting it, then you will know what you're facing fairly early on. The chances are that something with the Mechless deck is going to start off with probably some basic resource, probably some strip mines, maybe a field construction site, something like that, maybe a staging ground, maybe something like a resource broker where you can tap it and put counters on it and then tap it to remove them the next turn. And there are no units played. And then when you attack, they're either going to do one of two things. They're going to let you kill whatever it is you attack or go for the stockpile, or they're going to redirect you with Disguise Coordinates. So from that point of view, you'll know that early on. You'll get those signs. You'll obviously have mech advantage. You'll have a board presence, and they'll just be sitting there.
Gotcha.
All right. Do we have a deck to discuss of what Mechless decks would look like if we were to play them over a kitchen table?
Well, the one is probably Worlds 98, played by Zvi Moshewitz, came 7th. He was unlucky in the last 8 as he drew Peter Sundholm, who's whose deck was actually quite strong against his. And to be honest, if he hadn't have drawn Peter or he'd have beaten Peter, he probably would have won. Because the other decks up there, the Comstar, a little chopper deck, with the SRMAs and the Davian Pilot deck, are quite weak to it. And you'll see that in Terry Borah's sideboard, because he actually has one of the cards we're going to queue up in a minute to counter it. So, yeah, strong deck. I would say instead of going through it, maybe check it out. It is on the Facebook page. And it is listed in there. I think at this point I've got to give a bit of credit to a guy called Donald Lim who created it way back when. He also created a deck called the 16-card Wonder, where you could lock someone down in two turns and they couldn't do anything about it. And he's also famous for playing the Mechless deck 3 world championships running. Didn't do particularly well on the second and third attempts, but he did. And credit to him, he was very inventive, very creative card player.
So what's the ultimate sideboard tech against a Mechless deck that's building up all these counters, Mark?
Well, theoretically, you would argue that it's the next card we're going to talk about, which is called Financial Collapse. And Financial Collapse is a 1 cost 5 politics buyout card that allows you to, when it's scrapped after you've revealed it, remove all the counters on a card under construction that your opponent controls and distribute them anywhere you want on cards that you're constructing. So, yep, you can take all 30 of those counters, and if you happen to have a little long-lost Deishi in your hand, you can drop them all on there and pay for all the buyouts and everything else. The politics buyout's a bit hard for those decks not running it, but, yeah, it's the counter to it. And you'll probably find that at the time, the people that are aware of it probably had a couple in the sideboard. It's a sideboard card at best. So note that it does work against those Clan Big Mech decks if they don't get everything out in one go. But the main thing will be that big bombing card.
And when, taking a little step back to cards from previous sets, things like Think Tank in particular, when is it the right strategy to put cards in your deck with buyouts that don't align with your primary resources and to rely on a card like a Think Tank to kind of get you what you need to play? If you're playing a, Assembly Logistics deck, but you want a Politics, when is that viable? And how do you want to approach that?
I think there's 2 ways of looking at this. When you look at this card, 1 cost, 5p, okay. If it's 1 cost plus 5p, so it's 6 resources if you don't pay the buyout, but if you don't play it, then it's game over next turn. Mm-hmm. It's very, very simple. You've got to play it. When you're thinking about the number in there, you need to look at the buyouts and how many you've got. 1 or 2 cards, maybe a think tank, maybe 2 think tanks. When you start getting more than that kind of number, then you start to think, well, actually, do I want think tank? Or do I actually want to play the plain vanilla resource anyway? I wouldn't play more than probably 3 think tanks in a deck. If I'm getting to 4 think tanks, I'm thinking actually maybe I should be playing 4 politics, for example, in this case. No easy answer to that. You have to kind of look at how many cards that require those additional buyouts and what they are.
Gotcha.
Isn't there a ruling with response to when you scrap Think Tank, especially opponents that are playing the Arrow 4s, Mark? So if somebody says, hey, you've got that Think Tank over there. I don't like you having a resource that isn't part of your main card build. I know you're going to want to tap it for scrap for politics at some point, or scrap it for politics. I'm going to tap my Arrow 4 to scrap your Think Tank. Isn't there a response that you can do?
Are you referring to the ruling that says you can scrap the think tank beforehand and gain the resource?
Right. That's when you want to scrap the think tank.
Yeah. Gotcha. That's interesting. So it's an instant speed.
It's not my favorite ruling, to be honest.
Yes, but it works, and that's the kind of thing you want that politics at instant speed. Like Mark was saying, if somebody's got 20 counters down there, and you are not going to be able to construct your financial collapse because you don't have 6 resources available, mm-hmm. You scrap the think tank that turn.
Gotcha. And how often do you use think tank? You know, I know War Funds is kind of like a staple. You know, Black Market Connections for a lot of decks is a staple. You know, where's think tank rank up there?
It depends on your sideboard. I think Travis, if like Mark was saying, if your sideboard needs to have cards that involve resources that are not going to be in your main deck, and there's say I have 2 cards in my sideboard that require politics, I'm going to have 2 think tanks in my main deck.
Gotcha.
Why the second one?
Just in case somebody's playing Teddy Kurita.
Just in case one of them gets scrapped.
Exactly. You're going to have redundancy. And Black Market Connections to pull think tank just feels bad.
Okay. Definitely.
Excellent. All right, next card.
Yeah. This looks like a card that was built to defeat another card that came out back in the Mercenary set. What was that? What was that broken card? I'd like to say broken again, Mark. I know you don't like that word. Something for Davian, perhaps.
You mean the 2 cost very generous Night Sky? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that in the past, and everybody that looks at it, you compare it to the Wolfhound, you compare it to the Centurion. You look at the fact that they missed hand-to-hand off it, the fact that it's got a gross overheat, et cetera, and everyone can say they're not the same level. This card, which is Inferno Missile Retrofit, I actually put in for 2 reasons, or even 3 reasons, to be honest. First of all was the fact that Peter, who won, actually Peter came second, but sorry, he came third. Let me get it right. Sorry, Peter. Peter Sundholm, who came third, was running this particular card. And then there are a couple of reasons that he ran this card. The first is that this card, Inferno Missile Retrofit, deals an opposing mech's overheat damage to it, and it doubles it. So on the Night Sky, which was a 172 overheat, 3+1, it would deal 6 damage to the Night Sky. So anything that hunted it, say a Fenris Prime to keep the numbers nice and easy, that would do 9 damage to a 1-7 mech and kill it. So you could hunt Night Skies with it. And there were a lot of overheat options chosen by Davian pilot decks, which we're going to see in a few slides, were very, very popular. So it was a very good card against those particular types of deck. But the second reason that this card was very, very useful was that it wasn't actually redundant against other decks. So, yes, it's fantastic against Davian Pilot because of that overheat. However, the second ability is grant AP armor piercing to one of your units. Now, all of a sudden, playing that on a Fenris Prime when you're going against a mechless deck means it's going to do 4 against that command card, not 3, which means magic 7, there you are, 4 damage, which is quite hard to achieve when you look at the Boom Wolf deck. It's only the Phantom A that has a 4 attack. So this was a really good pick from his point of view, because you were using it for one thing, but it performed admirably well against the other, in this case, the Mechless deck, or as a pure resource hunter deck. So it wasn't a one pick to counter something. It was a strong pick to counter a number of things or boost your deck. And additionally, it's a deploy revealed. So it was basically a freebie. So he used it very, very well. And it was a very clever card choice. I seem to recall, I think he had a couple, 2 or 3 in the main deck and another one in the sideboard, if my memory is good, or it might be the other way around. I remember looking at this and thinking, how's he got that in there for? And then you look at the Night Sky and it's very, very obvious. So in those days, very good card, very strong. These days, because the Night Sky got fixed, Mechless got changed, people don't run so much overheat or not in the same numbers, it's got to go down. I mean, originally, probably in the deck when Peter ran it, it's probably an 8. These days, it's probably a 4 or a 5. You could put it in and play with it, but it's probably not going to break too many rules. The only other thing I have thought of is I think you can put this on a Thor and go and kill Widowmaker. I think. Thor's got 5 cost damage and Widowmaker's a 5+7, so it'll do 10. Yes, a Thor Prime with one of these on can kill Widowmaker because of the overheat.
Yeah. Let's talk about who normally would...
is very thematic, as I recall, because it was a Thor that killed the Widowmaker.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Widowmaker and Khan Natasha. She makes a play in this set. She is a command card, non-pilot now. We all saw Natasha back at the beginning being an extremely overcosted pilot, one who almost never would see play with her cost. Now we see her as a command card with a 3. A 3 is a standard cost for a command card. You look at, for example, Adam Steiner. He's a 3. He comes in the starter deck for your Steiners, and it does some great things for 3 untapping a mech. Well, she doesn't untap mechs, but she does give you +1 initiative. She's a KG 1, and you basically, unless somebody is out there jumping and you're on the attack, you're going to be able to see where they're dealing their damage and where they're assigning all of their different options attack to your mechs. So you're going to have the initiative with her in play. She's not as good as Kai, where you automatically win initiative, but we'll talk about that later. She has a 4 politics buyout, which can be overcome with the Trial of Grievance. We'll talk about that in a different set, but the politics buyout is prohibitive in most clan decks. She has no attack, and you see that in many command cards, but she has no attack, which I think is a little odd. She has to be defended if you want to keep getting her tap bonus of a +3 attack, but she's better than a contract in that she doesn't, your unit isn't scrapped if that unit receives 5 damage. It's only scrapped if the unit is scrapped. So she's a fair equivalent of a clan contract with the upside of giving you +1 initiative, but it's still not as cool as something like Solaris Contacts from the Inner Sphere that we're going to see later. So I would give her a 3.
I hate this. I hate this card. This to me is everything that says Wizards of the Coast hated clans. She's got a politics buyout. Well, most clan are AMT, so 4th asset, no, doesn't work. +1 initiative, fine, okay, nice. The other guy jumps, big deal. Yeah, tap and give something +3. But she's a command card. You've got to defend her. She's only 3/3. And Tyria, she's got +1 attack. Natasha's got nothing. You know, and I hate the art. Enough said. 3.
As opposed to Tyria, who probably has one of the best character arcs, in my opinion.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
There are some duds. We'll get to Shin Yadama. That's some great art, too. That might be my favorite character art. All right. We talked about the Khan. What's next?
Mark, you've got a way to put really big mechs out for cheap.
All right, okay. My choice again, mainly because I use this card in making a Dash Daishi deck way back when. It's Omni-Mech Podcache. It's a 3/3A/3L, so assembly and logistics. And just remember, it affects Omni-Mechs only. So there are a few mechs that came later or out at the time, something like Peregrine, for example, that this won't work on. And the ruling effectively is in the text, where it says that you can tap Omni-Mech Podcache, change a variant of a mech that you own and put it in the patrol region. So the trick here is just build a mech, activate it. At the end of your turn, it would normally come out. You don't do that. You tap Omni-Mech Podcache, you change it, you put it straight out. And that in itself effectively dashes the mech or gives it the facility to dash that mech. The the buyouts aren't great, and you have to pay the difference between the prices of the mech, the costs of the mech. However, it does mean that you can effectively get Widowmaker out on turn three. So there is a way to do it. And basically, you play an assembly and you put down a Daishi B with a counter on it. You then play a logistics and a war funds, put three counters on your Daishi B. And then on the following turn, you put down you tap all three of those to get your Omni Mech pod cache. You scrap your war funds for a field construction site, which has got zero cost, tap it for one, add two more counters. So basically your Daishi B is on six counters, and then you play a double overtime to get that to 12. You've got A&L on the table, so the Daishi B comes out, and then you tap the Omni Mech pod cache and put Widowmaker on the table with the dash facility, scrapping eight of your own cards, and at that point you then go and attack for whatever it is, because stupid numbers. Can be done. The other popular, well, there are two popular themes with Omni Mech pod cache. One is to turn a Fenris C or a Fenris A, so they're two or three cost, into probably Fenris Bs. Or the other one is the Black Hawk D, the two cost 170 missile boat, and you turn that into the Black Hawk S, which came out in the following set, Arsenal, which is a 178 AP1, if I remember rightly, with jump. And again, you can attack straight away, and you're about level card-wise, but you've got a 178 on the table, which puts you in quite a strong position. So it's fun, but it's never going to be much more than fun, really.
Yeah, the win is to be able to pull that off, that combo off. Whether you actually end the game with cards in your stockpile or not, the fact that you were able to pull that combo off, I think, is a win in itself from a design perspective.
I would say that there are a number of combo decks out there. You know the Loose Cannon one, for example. I would say that the Dash Daishi one, if you're playing six Daishi Bs, you're going to play more than six A in logistics and probably six war funds and six OPCs and six double overtimes, then you've probably got a good a chance of pulling that combo off, because there are six of each in the first three, turn three, five cards to start, three draws, 11 cards. So on average, you would draw one of each, maybe not in the right order, but you've probably got more chance of pulling that off than a number of the other combo decks that are out there.
Sounds like a Johnny card all the way home.
It is, but it's fun. You did talk about Foch's 16 card wonder lock deck. Is that going to be featured in here, Mark?
We'll do that another time.
All right.
We'll let you have the one-on-one card, and you know how much I hate this one as well.
Yeah, this card, single combat, is fantastic. In every single mech-based build, especially mech-based builds in which your mechs may be bigger and slower, this card is control with an upside. For a Clan and Karita player, they cannot opt out of the single combat, so they cannot untap your mech. You get the advantage of being able to go on a mission with your mech first, and then choosing that tapped mech, a big one that maybe was successful in the mission, nobody blocked it, and taking out yet another mech. And tactics buyout at five is pretty steep. Nobody really wants to pay eight for a command card, but most of these decks are already going to be running tactics. And it does say one armor, five structure, so it never is going to be targeted by an arrow four. It was revised in Commander's Edition to be three armor and three structure, which means in the Karita M build that was running eight arrow fours and the bombardment, one arrow four, one bombardment will do those three structure damage right out of the gate. So it's possible it could be targeted in Tony Miracle's deck. But otherwise, I think single combat's going to stay on the board, and it's a huge control card for a person who is playing mechs. I rated a 9, possibly a 10. It's that good.
It's gross. It's probably a 10. It's incredibly abusable. If you think about the Boom Wolf deck that we've seen, and then you've seen the other Innisphere decks at the time. Mongoose was still an Innisphere card. It was probably the only fast unit they ran. Then they ran a lot of Centurion, Wolfhound, Zeus, big guys, bits in the middle, whatever else you want to call it. How do you deal with a pesky dasher if you haven't got any Mongoose on the table? It's simple. You take whichever pilot it is on the Zeus and you send it at the stockpile, and if he chump blocks, the dasher dies. When he doesn't do that, you then, having tapped your mech, decide to use it as a single combat and single combat the dasher with the Zeus and the pilot and kill it. Be careful, because it's deemed a mission, but you can't play any mission cards. However, any pilot abilities and other any other card abilities are still valid, which again is, yeah.
So Kai gets another +2 attack. It's crazy. Your Chaos March veteran gets the +2 attack. Yeah. It's fantastic. Fantastic.
It's crazy because it looks like there's no downside if you're not playing Clan or Kurita, because there's still value, because you're essentially tapping to untap one of your mechs, if I'm reading this right.
Yeah, there's no downside, Travis. That's the thing. Yeah. This card has no downside, which is why in the articles that I've been featuring on the group, often you will see single combat as a card that is included in those decks that do not have, 12 fast units. Mm-hmm. But they've got guys that have staying power, guys that are thick, like you're looking at the Zeus, guys that have thick structure, thick armor, but they're just slower and they're not going to have a chance at catching up with those Fenrises or those Dashers. But single combat is a way to level the playing field against the Clan.
Definitely. And to illustrate,
you might argue that there's no downside to it, but arguably you could argue that there's two upsides to it. Yeah. You think about the Zeus versus the Dasher example. Zeus goes to the stockpile. You know you're going to single combat the dash or whatever. So you're either forcing him into chump blocking or you get a free hit. Then you tap it and kill the dasher anyway. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, and just for those that are just listening, not watching, that extra card text is, if the opponent has no Kurita or Clan cards in play, he or she may avoid this battle by untapping your mech. So either he's got to fight you or he's got to allow you to untap that mech and use it again.
Hit the stockpile again, yeah.
Yeah.
So you were talking about control cards previously, hand destruction control. There's quite a few control themed cards in Mech Warrior. I've noticed that, Mark. What about this one?
Yeah, Severed Supply Lines. I've put both of these cards in. There's another one we're going to talk about afterwards, is Work Stoppage. And it bemuses me because they seem very, very similar, and I can never work out why they put both in and not just one. The only difference being that Work Stoppage is St. Ives only. This one basically says that your assets don't work unless you deploy a card with that asset. So if you've got 5 assembly on the table and I choose assembly, you have to put a new assembly card on the table to have that asset available. So the buyout wouldn't work on a normal unit, for example. And that could be quite strong, but the thing here is that the asset that you probably want to reduce is the one that your opponent is most likely to be playing the most of. So, for example, if he's playing let's say a Dragonfly deck, then all of those Dragonflies have got A buyouts. So you're going to be thinking, I need to reduce his assembly so he's got to pay more for them. But he's smart because he knows that that's the primary asset in his deck, and he's running 9 of them. So it kind of defeats itself in my mind with this one. The only thing to say with this is that Think Tank doesn't work with this particular version of the card because it doesn't provide an asset. You have to, it's when the asset is deployed. It's not good. It's not good card. It's a 3 or something like that, because it's kind of self-defeating in my mind.
It's a trap. Now, you mentioned Think Tank. Those decks that require politics and gain the politics by a think tank or a trial of grievance, those decks that have no real politics in them, Sever Supply Lines actually in those type of decks is against those type of decks is very effective because they will always be playing the max buyout because there's no way in their deck or their sideboard to actually acquire the politics basic resource vanilla to put down. So when you look at this card, we're talking about trap cards. This is absolutely a trap card. It's not going to work for what you think it is, but for what you think, well, for against a deck that might have a couple of cards for a politics buyout that they want to use, you choose politics rather than the assembly or tactics, and you're actually going to deny that resource to them for the rest of the game.
The other thing to say, he's got no armor, no structure. You can't attack it. You can't get rid of it. The only way you get rid of it is to deploy the card, which has that effect. So Gustav's right that if you're playing with a couple of think tanks in order to get round that buyout, then this is the antithesis of it. This will absolutely screw you. But the problem with that is that who does that? you're only gonna play it on a small amount of cards, as we've said. Yeah. If you get into four cards and you're thinking I need a buyout, then you're gonna put them in the main deck probably. So
right. And we're on to the next one as well. We mentioned work stoppage, and this is going back to St. Ives. It's one of the St. Ives rare command cards that we see for that house, and it's a stall card. It messes with their curve, and in this case, instead of denying them that resource until they play one, it just says, as long as this is in play, you don't get that resource. So it's a problem in that all you're doing is stalling. It doesn't create a board presence. It doesn't give you a blocker. It doesn't damage your opponent's stockpile. It just stalls and makes what they have cost more. And what happens when my opponent plays the think tank and scraps it? Mark?
Think tank gets around this one, yeah.
Exactly. That's terrible. So if my opponent does play with the two think tanks in their deck, they're going to be able to get around this anyways. It's another trap card, but it looks cool from a control perspective.
The way to think about this is the one deployment and 3/6p cost of this card worth the stall that I'm going to give my opponent? Because it's a deployment and it's a series of resources. Am I going to stall them more than I'm going to stall myself?
And it's five. You have to defend it as opposed to work stoppage, which is in play, period. You got to defend this for a five.
Yeah.
Not as good. So let's talk about some themes of deck building.
Okay, that was our little trawl through Rasselhagen and a bit of the command cards. Now we're going to get into the what can only be described as the meatballs in the batter, the seriously juicy stuff here. And this card was controversial when they announced the set content. So Wizards had a habit of giving out a card list and a spoiler list of each of the card's details before the cards were released for purchase. So when this came out, everyone went absolutely crazy. And we'll see why.
It is crazy. This is crazy. I mean, we talked about the Night Sky as being a card that everybody saw as being above the curve in every possible category. The cost for value was off the charts. This is beyond the charts. This is stratosphere level.
Do you want to go through it or shall I do it?
I'll go through it. Number one, this is a resource. That means if this is in your deck with four war funds, you're going to be able to have this card in play by round two or round three, and with only two copies. You're going to get this with war funds. This is going to be in play. You can tap it for one of two things, either a basic resource, which is fine. You're only paying one for it. You're likely to have T already, or any pilot card in your hand. That's right. Any pilot. Doesn't have to be generic. It can be Kai Champion of Solaris, Kai Allard, Prince Victor, Victor, any of the massive, the big pilots out there. You can put it in play on a unpiloted mech you control. And, that doesn't count as a deployment. It didn't count, guys. Consider it a free deploy of a cost six pilot. And he now is not just under your construction. He's in play on a mech ready to go on a mission. Oh, and we talked about the value of attacking certain command cards and whether or not they're resilient. This has 5 armor and 3 structure. Oh, and Khan Natasha got no attack, but Solaris Contacts gets 1 attack as well. So now you got to be thinking, well, you know, if my dasher go, a couple of dashers go against it, it's going to do half the damage to him. It's got 1 attack. There's no weakness in this card.
It's, but you guys it's are
a,
such a
it's a level 11, Travis. 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. You guys are such a tease
for the audio because you haven't even said what the card is yet.
Solaris Contacts.
Indeed, Solaris Contacts. To the point in my home games where Solaris Contacts is a banned card. But
I mean, let's face it. Pilot deck, A Mongoose turn 1, T Solaris tap, Kai on the Mongoose, stockpile for 6. The other guy might have a dasher. That's going to survive, isn't it? The only hope they've got, and you see it in Peter's deck, dasher with probably pushing the envelope to kill both. Even then, you've got 2 resources, 3 resources down, because this is a resource in itself. Before war funds, people would run 8 assembly, 8 tactics, 4 Solaris, 2 BMs, black market, maybe a think tank or 2. That got reduced with war funds and gave the deck even more reliability. But getting rid of this thing, it's gross. It's such a monster in what it is as a 5/3 resource. I mean, you might argue that if it got 1 structure and it being a bit of arrow 4 bait, then that might equal it up. I would agree that how this got 1 attack and Natasha got to sit there as a 3/3 compared to this, it's just crazy. And as Gus said, you're putting in to play a pilot for free. And in Mech Warrior, there were a bucket load of pilots.
Let's talk about the big 3. The big 3 pilots that we see. The big three that Mech Warrior gave us. Mech Warrior gave us my favorite card in the entire game, Kai, Champion of Solaris. 6 cost, 4 tactics buyout, plus 1 initiative, but don't worry, there's more, plus 4 attack, and yes, indeed, you win initiative. There's no jumping, there's no expert time. You win. You just win. Win initiative right out of the gate. It does count as Kai Allard while in play, but you're going to play both of those in a big pilot deck. You're going to have Kai Allard, Kai Champion of Solaris, because you just want 1 out, like Mark said, on turn 2. You want 1 out on turn 2. Let's just be fair. You get a Kai out on turn 2. You are so ahead in the damage game. It's not even fair. And then the second one, his bosom buddy, Prince Victor Steiner-Davian, another Fedrat pilot. This one costs 6. Remember, Victor only cost 5. This one costs 6 with a tactics buyout, but this one doesn't require you basically to go in with a swarm of mechs. He's going to give you plus 3 attack all on his own, plus 3 initiative, and the bonus that each other mech in a group that includes a mech pilot by Victor Steiner-Davian gets another plus 1 attack and plus 1 initiative. So he doesn't basically the have to go with a bunch of mechs like Victor did, but if he does, he gives them bonuses as well. And both of those are 10 out of 10 for sure. Those are 10 out of 10 pilots. Those are top rank busted pilots. The reason they cost 6 is because they do amazing things. You are trivializing them with Solaris Contacts, putting them in play for free and not paying any of that and getting a free deployment basically for a pilot. The third one is Shin Yodama. Now, he's a little bit different in that he requires not just tactics buyout of 3, but logistics buyout of 3 as well. But who cares? Nobody's paying a logistics because Solaris Contacts puts it in play for free. He gives you plus 2 initiative and plus 1 attack. And if a mech piloted by Shin is scrapped during the mission, put that mech and Shin back on top of your stockpile. So we talk about card advantage. We talk about hand advantage. This you can go in. Do the Yakuza, the end run, whatever you want to do, where he's going to blow up. He's going to blow up some other people. His mech's going to be gone. He's going to be gone. But he is not gone forever because those 2 cards you're going to draw next turn are Shin and his mech again. Fantastic value. Not quite a 10, but we'll give him a 7. What do you think, Mark?
I think the ability on Kai that we kind of glossed over, which is any opposing mech takes 2 damage. Is crazy. That is effectively the carpet bombing mission that came out in Arsenal for free, built into the card. You win initiative. That again was another mission that came out, I believe, again in that might be in Mercenaries. I'm not sure, but basically you've got 2 mission cards for free there, plus 1 initiative, so you can play another mission card if you want, and 4 attack. Kai is, I mean, forget Solaris contacts. Is that value at 6? And you've got to say, pretty good value, actually, even at 6. Victor, basically, +3, +3, but you've got the fanatical leader, or the fanatical fruit bat, as we call them over here, ability built in again. Or a +1, +1. Again, there's probably a mission card that does that. So it's a free mission card with the unique themselves. Victor, you might just say slightly underpowered for Kai. If Kai was a 7 and Victor was a 6, I think, you know, a lot of people would understand that. But even so, that's not detracting anything from him. The damage boost and the extra +1, +1 on everything else is just crazy. Again, you might say Kai does 2 to everything. Victor gives everything +1 damage. Numbers game, we can play all day, but it's still very, very powerful. Shin, I like Shin. I think Shin's a very interesting card. I think the fact that it's a logistics buyout means it may well be a logistics deck, and you're actually incorporating a restock of 2 effectively on the top. The only thing with that is that it can mean that your opponent can, well, they'd have to get a bit sneaky. They'd have to probably mech hunt Shin's mech, and then once you've restocked him and put him on the top of the pile, gone and attacked the stockpile in order to get rid of him. But that doesn't mean he's particularly easy to get away with. I like Shin. I think it's an interesting card, whereas I think the others are just playing more and more and more, if you see what I mean, bigger and better each time.
I have found when I played Shin that it kind of locked me down. You know, I made the mistake of putting him on a relatively weak card, and so he was dying a lot, and it just locked me into drawing the same 2 cards over and over again, which was not helpful for that game. So definitely kind of be aware of what mech you choose to put them on in that case.
Agreed with that. But again, it depends on, because you, if you're playing Shin, but you're not playing Solaris, then you might be looking at something with logistics, additional draw in your deck, or something like that. You have to be careful with Shin, but I just like the idea. I think it's different. I think that was creativity. Whereas I think Kai and Victor are just bigger, better, more type cards. Okay. So that was the Inner Sphere who got Solaris contacts to chuck all these pilots out. And we haven't done all the generic pilots yet. We're going to do the other ones in a minute.
Well, before there was an interesting, we didn't touch on the fact that Kai Champion Solaris is different in this release than it was later for Commander's Edition. This came up as an interesting bit of trivia in the podcast with Peter Sunholm and Terry Bohr, where if you read this, this says deal 2 damage to each mech engaged in battle with mech piloted by Kai Champion Solaris, which Terry had mentioned that he brought up, and he did that in a game where his opponent used Kai. And Terry pointed out that that's 2 damage to each mech. It doesn't say 2 opposing mechs.
That was Terry and one of the DCI judges, who Terry and the judge didn't necessarily see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. The interesting, yeah. Well, it's the use of the word engaged here, isn't it? As opposed to opposing.
Yep.
So anybody engaged implied everybody in the battle. So Kai literally obliterated everybody, including his own forces in that instant. And that was ruled by as a judge. And I think most people were of the opinion that that was wrong. And probably one of the problems with Magic judges officiating Battletech tournaments, players, it's red kind of thing and whatever else. It was updated. The words were changed in Commander's Edition. I honestly don't think that it made a great deal of difference. I remember at the time there was a lot of disharmony, shall we say, in the Battletech community about whether Terry was right or whether he was wrong, whether he was a Magic player and we hate Magic players because we're Battletech players and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a tournament. As he said, you play to win. And if the guy rules it that way, then that's on the judge's head, not his head, really.
Yeah. And to clarify, Terry was arguing that, you know, it does 2 damage to friendly mechs as well. And the DCI judge ruled that it didn't, which was clarified in the later rules. But, you know, my interpretation is Terry was right in that situation. And I think Justin
was right on that wording. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. He was right on the wording, but not on the intent.
Yeah. But that's the job of the rules committee. You can't change the rules, you know, in the middle of the tournament. Right. So.
So we've done the Innisphere and Solaris and the pilots. We've said how bad Natasha was for the clans. Now we get to do the clan version, kind of, or Wizards of the Coast attempt to try and give the clan the same thing and fail miserably, is what I would describe this as. This is a mission card called Sibco Allegiance, which basically require or says that you can search your stockpile for a copy of any pilot card you control and put them into play on an engaged mech. Okay. Well, the bad side here is that any copy means that the pilot that you control already has to be in the game. And secondly, that means it's got to be non-unique. So you can't go and get Natasha Kerensky with this, or Phelan, or any of the others. It has to be a plain vanilla stroke generic pilot, and that's a problem. Secondly, it has to be on the table. Now, the wording here was updated in Commander's Edition to say that it had to be in play, not engaged. So if you've got a pilot on a mech somewhere else, you could pull that pilot and put it into this particular battle, whereas this ruling kind of implies that it has to be another copy in the battle. But it's nowhere near Solaris Contacts. Nowhere near. It might be a nice surprise to pull out something and shock somebody, but it's just awful, really, when you compare it to Solaris Contacts, which just obliterates everything.
It's not even on the same playing field. I agree, Mark. It's a low, definitely a much lower number. not even the same game plan. But in the right deck, it can do some good things. I mean, I threw a deck out there not too long ago that involved Risters and Solhama Mech Warriors, both of which I think, as far as generic clan pilots go, they're like at the top for generic clan pilots. And one copy of Sibco Allegiance in order to pull a second one of those generic pilots into play isn't bad.
I'm not.
But it's, you're not convinced. let's talk about Rister then. We got some clan pilots.
All right.
Yeah. Clan received 2 pilots. One is a generic Rystar, Ristar, whatever else you call it, which is quite a nice card, actually. It's quite an interesting pilot. 1 cost, so you can pay for it, which is, thank God, because you haven't got Solaris. 4T. It gives you 1 initiative and 1 attack. But this is a mission monster. Because on each mission, you roll a die, 1 to 3, nothing happens. 4 to 6, you return the mission card to your hand. So you get 2 rolls for superior navigation to unblock and everything else. And very, very powerful at the time. It's a good card. It's not going to break the world, but it's a good card. I'd probably put it at about a 7. The other card, or the other pilot that the clan received, was Phelan Ward. 3 costs, so you've got to pay for him, but it's 4 politics and 2 tactics. And politics being the asset that the clan don't do very well, so he's not likely to be incorporated. Counts as Phelan when in play, +1 initiative, +2 attack, quite nice. And basically the ability is all mechs deal no damage, put Phelan back in your hand, which is basically a temporary ceasefire without the die roll. But you pay for the die roll with 3 resource counters, putting him on and off the table. Is he useful? Maybe. You might pull him off now and again, but he's nowhere in the stellar category of Vic and Kai. And you look at this and you think, Sibco, Rystar's decent, Phelan, and then you look at the other three and Solaris, and you think the clans really did get duped here, didn't they?
Yeah. You there is a way to play Phelan with Solaris contacts. You just have to use an alliance that came out in Crusade, and you can do that, and you can get basically Phelan a no die roll temporary ceasefire every turn if you're playing that particular alliance involving Steiner and Wolf, but it's still not worth it. He's a low number, like a 4 or a 3. It's just nobody plays Phelan. Who cares if he replaces Phelan? Nobody plays him either. He's a 1. So yeah. At least this is a pilot with 2 attack and plus 1 initiative. So it's better than that.
And finally, there were 4. Well, I picked out 4 generic pilots that were also released with Mech Warrior. 2 of them are along the same lines. The Redline pilot for 3. And the sharpshooter for 1 basically allow you to ignore overheat in the case of Redline and Alpha Strike in the case of sharpshooter effects, and gave +2 damage on each of them. So all of a sudden, then some of those units that have got horrible overheats, I'm thinking one of the quick draws has got a 4+2 or something, practically kills itself. You put a Redline pilot on it and it doesn't take any damage and it's dealing 6, then you know, these are they're quite useful in that respect.
Wasn't there a Cyclops that with this does 7?
Yeah. There are the whole load out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sharpshooter, again, but for Alpha Strike, and it doesn't deplete. Bit of a boost for Alpha Strike, really, to be honest. And all of the... you can put those out with Solaris for free. They're reasonably generic. They can go in clan or in a sphere decks. One of the other ones, which is the Headhunter, is a little interesting. It's a bit different card. Basically, it's 1 attack and there's a die roll. 1 to do is prevent damage. 3 to 5 is nothing happens. But on a 6, you scrap a mech that it deals damage to. And you often found at the time that the pilot decks might have 1 or maybe 2 of these in the sideboard in order to deal with those big mech decks. Because you only have to deal 1 damage to them in order to get the die roll. Okay, it's probably a lucky die roll to scrap a Daishi on a 6, but it could happen. And it was kind of a counter. And also remember that with our friend Single Combat, you can get a 2nd roll. Because you can attack them again. It's not a mission, but all the effects apply. So, yes, you and the clan can't refuse it. So, Headhunter, possibly quite useful. You know, Redline and Sharpshooter, probably somewhere between 5 and 7, depending on your mech decks. Headhunter is a 6. The one I would say isn't particularly good is the Gearhead. The idea that, okay, it's +1 attack, and you can heal an additional... damage that's on your unit each turn is cute, but generally things die or they don't die, and on a mech that's without damage, that effect is useless. So I would caution about using that card. It doesn't seem that great to me. But what's Gustav's opinion?
I agree. Both the Redline and the Sharpshooter near decks built around them. Alpha Strike, as we all know, is the weaker of the two boosting attack value options for a mech. You have a mech with both Alpha Strike and Overheat. You'll be using Overheat a much more often because you don't have your mech out of commission for an entire turn when it's depleted. Sharpshooter allows you to keep those mechs out there. There's a Charger, I believe, that was released in Crusade that with a Sharpshooter has got a magic number 7. That's fantastic. The Redline pilot really makes a difference. It's the most expensive of these generic pilots out there, but for the Inner Sphere, of course, Solaris contacts, you're paying nothing for it anyway. But even at 3, if you have to pay it for a clan, it really does make a difference because a lot of those clan units have devastating overheats for their value. I mean, overheat 7 for 5, just incredible overheats out there. 7 for 7. I'm looking at you, the Ghost Bear chase card. But you put what's the Blackhawk that almost kills itself? The 13 cost Blackhawk. the red line pilot makes that. Oh, okay. So it's not killing itself and it's doing a world of hurt. I really like the red line pilot. Of all of those out there, I think the red line pilot is a 7 or 8. And it's worth, even without Solaris context, it's worth paying the 3 for that. Headhunter is a very interesting ability. Anytime your deck is relying on die rolls, though, I would caution about using that in a competitive environment. Like Mark was saying, a sideboard against a big mech deck, it might be worth it to have there in there and just have the die rolls, hoping for the lucky scrap, the crossbow, if you're playing against the invading clans that are using all those, the 12 crossbows. But I would not rely on getting that headhunter ability. Rolling a 6 is a lot more difficult on its own than it's probably worth. Now, there are command cards out there that can modify die rolls. And if you want to have those type of resources in your deck, I think it would be better suited if you would go back to a McMallet type deck where you're getting a die roll that is a lot more likely to happen, a 50-50 die roll, and allows you to completely untap your mech and go again. So rather than looking at, hey, this will scrap a mech, my mech is actually going to be able to go on another mission and do damage again. So in value, if you're looking at die roll modifications, I'd rather have die roll modification payouts on a McMallet deck rather than a headhunter. So for what it does, it's unique. It does something that no other card does, but it's unlikely to occur. And the gearhead is trash. It costs 0 for a reason because it's a trap card.
I love Redline Pilot.
You have any decks you want to share with us, Mark, involving those?
Yeah. What I'd say with the Redline Pilot is Davian Zeus, 273, overheat 2+2, Redline Pilot, 7. Oh dear, that just means any Fenris with a bit of single combat. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Dead.
Did you want to share any decks with for us involving any of those generic pilots, Mark?
I had a crazy Rystar combo deck where basically you played Koshier on the first turn in tactics and then put a Rystar on it, and the next turn you play Superior Nav, Force of Will, and then you needed tactical advantage to give you additional initiative, which draws a card as well, and then you play Rampage as well and roll the dice, and effectively or it is possible. A lot of die rolling and die empathy, because you want sixes all the time. You could actually kill somebody on the second turn with that deck. It is possible.
It's possible.
I think the most I've ever got into, I think I got to 35.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of...
What you do forget is that if you don't get the superior nav back, tactical advantage does draw you a card. So you could draw another superior nav. There's quite a nice cycle in there, but yeah, it's just a crazy idea.
Well, there's a completely another theme that MechWarrior gave us. We had that first terrain in Mercenaries, the difficult terrain that slowed everybody down by one gauge. So you're looking at the fast units that would be attacking in this terrain, drop down to moderate or medium, and then the medium speed would be dropping down to slow. Well, they gave us, in my mind, one of the greatest advantages for slower decks when they gave us some of these terrain. And that card is Rocky Gorge. So many of those fast units out there, I'm looking at you, a little Spanky, and all of your protege, have very low structure. A Dasher Prime, 3 attack, 2 structure, fast. A Rocky Gorge on the stockpile makes your opponent think, do I want to sacrifice my little Spanky to do those 3 damage, knowing that he won't be around anymore? Rocky Gorge is a 3-cost command card. It's an enhancement terrain that every attacking mech or unit receives 2 damage. Use this ability only during a mission whose target is in the region enhanced by Rocky Gorge. So Rocky Gorge is my favorite enhancement of all time, because the ability to do damage to a unit, and not just a unit, but every unit that attacks in that region, is huge. So another my next favorite terrain card is Fogshroud and Wars. And similar to Rocky Gorge, it has a all unit implication. A unit, a region enhanced by Rocky or by Fogshroud and Wars gives all mechs or units involved in that region minus one attack and plus one armor. And you might think, well, you're decreasing the attack by every one of opponent's attacking units by one, which is fantastic against the Inner Sphere Weenie Swarms that are putting two units out a piece. Most of those units are going to have two attack. Basically, you're reducing their attack power by 50% against that deck. But the second thing that you look at is that all of those units in that region get plus one armor. Now think about your own units that are in that region getting the bonus armor and being able to block and deal damage and killing one of the attacking units. That's also a huge bonus. So it affects both your units as well as your opponent's units. And Fogshroud and Wards, I give an 8. It's also very fantastic, especially against those who want to hunt your units or your units and put that in patrol. Missile boats are often the targets of being hunt down. This gives them a guaranteed plus one armor and all of the attacking units minus one attack. It's fantastic. Another powerful enhancement, and when we're going down the list in value here, I would rank this one a 7, is Civilian Settlement. Now, in addition to the 3 base cost, this also has 2 politics. So it's 5 to play if you don't already have politics in your deck. But this one is kind of a stalemate type card. When you're looking at, you know, a dozen or so cards in your stockpile and about the same in your opponent's, having Civilian and Settlement in play makes a lot of math computations for your opponent, because Civilian Settlement says for every 3 damage dealt by attacking mechs to mechs or sites you control in this region enhanced by it, the attacking player scraps a card from his or her stockpile. So when you think about your blocking your stockpile and the Civilian Settlement is on your stockpile and your opponent's doing 6 damage to your mechs, that's 2 cards off of his stockpile and no cards off of yours. So when you get down to the nitty gritty end game, when you're actually counting how many cards are left in your stock, how many cards left in theirs, this card can make or break that game. And I'd rank it a 7, especially if you have a deck that's already playing politics. And finally, they gave us a card that allows you to scrap any terrain in play, and that is Creative Terraforming. It's got a 4 politics buyout, but if you've got politics in play, it's no problem because it only costs 1. It's a scrap and reveal card, but you're going to be revealing it as soon as you play it. It only costs 1, but it will get rid of any of those terrain cards in play or enhancements in play. And enhancements, there are a lot of enhancements you can play on a site. You got a point defense system and other type of enhancements you can play on a site. Creative Terraforming is a good sideboarding card, especially if your clan running Trial of Grievance and Think Tank to get rid of those Rocky Gorges. So those are my highlights for the terrains in MechWarrior. There are other terrains that were there. These are what I would consider to be the best 3 terrains available in this set. And then a way to get rid of them all in Creative Terraforming. What do you think, Mark?
I think at the time, I don't think Gorge was that popular. I think when you could drop it with falsified maps, then the popularity came out a lot more, especially because of the cost. I think
there's a rule on that, right? Where you can play
if you've got one in play and you play it in the right order, you can get double. You declare the 2 from the first one, then you declare the mission, put the new gorge down and declare that. You have to do it in the right order. It's a bit fiddly, but you can get 4 damage out of it, basically. At the time, Fogshrouded Moors was more popular and arguably more interesting. The Mechless deck would run it, and the reason for running it would be the minus attack on the from the attacking mechs, because one of the methods of dealing with the Mechless deck was to resource hunt, and that just made things particularly difficult. And it also supported disguise coordinates. So, for example, if you look at a field construction site, which is a 5-3, and you're going across thinking, oh, that's 8, so I need 3 dasher primes to kill it, and then there's a fog-shrouded moors on there, you're only going to do 6 in total. So it was used quite prolifically in Mechlis decks as a survival mechanic. It was also used in a lot of the Inner Sphere decks, because one of the methods of dealing with swarm, the 2 mech per turn, 2 cost 2 mech per turn swarm, was to hunt the resources. So you'd put this on your resources, knowing that they couldn't kill the resources and they would survive, and then you could drop 2 more mechs next turn instead of losing a resource and being on 3 resources and having to play a mech and a resource. And the third version of it was actually comboing fog-shrouded moors with heavy fog, because they do stack, and having 3 armor and -3 attack on everything. So literally, it was everyone was just going around in the fog trying to find out what the hell was going on, and nothing went.
Yeah.
And that was quite a nullifier for those decks that sent over 4 or 5 units at a time. The civilian settlement, yeah, it's fine. Just be wary of it, because a lot of people forget. They think it's 3 damage to the stockpile, and it's not. It's more than that. And creative terraforming is the only method at the moment that I know of removing a terrain properly. The enhancement bit, again, most people forget the enhancement bit for your point defense system. These aren't the only resources, terrains available in MechWarrior. There are a whole raft of them. And we'll move on to a couple of the others, or we've picked 4 of them out. And again, these are nowhere near as good as people think they are. Narrow Valley basically means that you can only attack with 2 mechs. Well, depending on the situation, you might even want to do that anyway. So the benefit for that, for 3 cost when you compare it to Rocky Gorge, it's trash. Heavy Woods is prevent 2 damage to the target. Well, if I block, I'm doing that anyway. If he's going to shoot long range through, then it might work. But basically, Fog Shrouded Moors is arguably better the majority of the time. Rolling Hills prevents damage to blocking mechs. And too situational. Fog Shrouded Moors works pretty much all the time. The other interesting, or the one that actually piqued my interest a little while ago, was actually Deep Lake, where basically it said that no overheat options took effect, so you could overheat without any problem, and that all structure damage, all armor didn't take effect, and structure damage was dealt straight through. And I had quite a nice little Battle Cobra deck with overheat mechs all over the place to deal with large big mech decks from clan in order to scrap them and stuff, which was a bit of fun. It's a different card, but it's not going to break the world, and it's never going to change much. So you might argue that they're playable, but generally they're low scores. And I mean, Narrow Valley I'd put as a 3, Heavy Woods as a 4. Maybe Deep Lake I would go to a 5, but they're not going to see play. Just be mindful of that and be careful of them.
I do have one card out there that was from the limited edition that can remove terrain in play.
Probably is, yeah.
It's Death Commando Strike, yeah. A subterfuge card from Lyo. It removes any command card in play, but it's only available to a house that doesn't see much play.
Nice. Terraforming, everybody can play it. They're both politics, yeah.
Right.
Terraforming gets the vote most of the time.
Yeah. Michael. So here we go. The clan casts were also introduced in this series, and we're going to go through some of those casts now. Of course, the most popular one, and this again, similar to Solaris Context, is Out of the Stratosphere, is Merchant Cast. Hands down, the greatest ramping asset in the game and clan exclusive. So all the love that Wizards of the Coast gave to the pilots was given to the pilots in the Inner Sphere. Mark and I agree on that. However, the clans build bigger, better, faster. and they do that with merchant cast for one cost and four logistics buyouts. And don't worry about that logistics. You're going to be playing it anyways. Trust me. You have the ability to choose any resource card in your hand. And I mean any resource, even resources that, lo and behold, might cost four, like Ice Cream Factory, improved constructive facilities. You can put that into play for free. And again, just like with Solaris Contacts, it does not count as a deployment. You use this ability only during your deploy phase. So it's broken. It's fantastic. It's amazing. And you have the ability to use Merchant Cast, activate another Merchant Cast, scrap the first one, and do it again. I mean, you can play two merchant casts in one turn and have two ICFs down in one turn. You're building those big mechs that have no other buyouts very, very quickly. It is the ramp card of all ramp cards. It's a 10 or 11. It's fantastic, and it makes that big mech deck click. Mark?
Really see light of day straight off. And the reason for that was improved construction facilities came out in Crusade. So the decks that were using those resources were using combinations of things like resource broker and advanced manufacturing techniques. So at this point in the history of the card game, it floated under the radar. It didn't really make an impact at this stage. It was just it's another clan card. What the hell's going on here? It's logistics. But once those additional resource cards came out, your ICFs example and your advanced manufacturing techniques, people started to work out that actually we've got a ramping element here that we can use to get bigger mechs out quicker.
Yeah.
So it took a little while for it to appear. And I don't think it was until the following Worlds, 99, that there was a big mech deck. I might be wrong. There might be one in 98. Can't quite remember. But it didn't really appear at that point. It wasn't until later that this just took off like a rocket. And it's great. It is arguably broken. The fact that you can put one down and then stick another one down. In fact, if I've got one down, I can stick another one down and another one down. And I can get three resources of whatever it is with the resource keyword on in a go is great. It's crazy. The thing to say here is that just builds mechs, whereas Solaris Contacts puts pilots out, and they arguably, you can say, have a lot more influence on the actual game. But, you know, it's great. If you're going to build a big mech deck, then you need that. The problem with the casts is the rest of them. And arguably, they're pretty trash to mediocre. There are only two that I would even consider anywhere near worth looking at. And the first one is Warrior Cast, where you the bonuses from a pilot that you activate, and note that the word says activate, so you can't use it with Solaris Contacts because that puts it into play for free. You can't use it with Sibco Allegiance because that does the same thing. So anyone that you activate passes its bonuses on to every mech, which is pretty good. The trouble is that you need pilots and then you need warrior casts. So those are 12 slots or are you running missions? And it's basically cramming it in to a deck. I've put a deck with a couple in and managed to activate star commanders on successive turns, giving all of my mechs plus two attack and plus one initiative. And it basically won me the game because I got so much extra firepower. But fitting it all in doesn't work. It's very hard to do. The other one that's interesting, I mean, again, it's a bit niche, is Scientist Cast. Because with Scientist Cast, you can recycle enhancements. Right, okay, recycle enhancement. Well, when you look at a card like Heatsink Destruction, that's an enhancement. So there is an option whereby a damaged mech can get Heatsink Destruction, and then basically it gets no attack, and then overheat plus overheat, whatever that value is, which basically wrecks it. So you can have a bit of fun with scientist cast and recycling that kind of enhancement. And the Inferno missile retrofit that we talked about earlier works really, really well with that because it's also an enhancement and you can recycle the whole lot for free. But it's very niche and it's a bit of fun. It's a Sunday afternoon deck. But the rest of them are about Warden casts and Crusader casts with defense and having to attack and all the other stuff. The Technician cast and the Law Master having two. I mean, you have to defend them all. And it's just messy and horrible. And it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't give you anything. So apart from Merchant cast, the general advice is don't look elsewhere.
Gotcha. Yeah, the first time I played against Merchant cast, I was just kind of like, what can I do? I was not ready for this.
We have the solution. You have the solution. On to the next bit, missions. The solution is in a missions card that was released in MechWarrior called Act.